What's up, everybody? This is NXpress, the Nintendo show of GoombaStomp.com. I'm Tim Mason. Here, as always, is Ricky D.
What's up, Tim?
Not much.
Not much. I'm drinking coffee today. No wine, no beer. What's up, Nintendo Nation? What's up, Tim Mason?
Not much. You're drinking the drink of my people in Seattle over here.
Which is odd, because my plan for today was to talk slow. Because apparently, according to Americans, I speak very fast.
I think you just have a lot of thoughts and a lot of emotions, and they just come pouring out of your soul, you know?
No, I think people in the South speak too slow. It's
Yeah, this ain't NPR, guys. We're going to talk fast. Get over it.
They got to have time to come up with that nice drawl, though, that the rest of us don't have. You got to, like, extend words.
You sound like the Joker or something when you extend your words like that.
I don't know what you mean, Timothy.
That's right there. That's Patrick Murphy. In case you're wondering, coming in creepy.
I think he based the Joker. I read this somewhere that Heath Ledger based the Joker's accent off the Midwestern accent. So that kind of makes sense that I would have a slight Jokerish vibe.
I like it. You should always talk like that. Just be the weird, creepy one that hates on stuff.
Also, there's the, you know, the latent psychopathy that I've got inside me. So there's
that. Yeah, at least yours is hidden. Mine's just on the forefront. So we've got a really exciting episode because we're getting all caught up on all sorts of indie games. Because you guys, we always said, like, over the past couple of months that the Switch has become like the haven for indie games and everything is 80% more fun on the Switch. So of course these indie games are gonna just thrive there. But man, it feels like an onslaught where we just had Celeste and people are like, yeah, 10 out of 10 game, this game's amazing. And now we have Owlboy. We have another game that I'm really excited to talk about because of its cultural impact. So it's exciting stuff. But before we get to that, Patrick is playing a really, really unheard of indie game. How do you pronounce this game, Patrick? I believe it's Skyrim?
Scrim, I believe.
Scrim? Okay.
Yeah. It's like an old Welsh term or something like that. Yeah. 7 years later, 8 years later, whenever the hell that game came out, I finally got around to playing it for the first time. I promised myself that I would play this game finally when it came out on Switch, and I finally bought it. And I'm liking it quite a bit. It is, look, Zelda Breath of the Wild was my first open world game, really. I mean, I had kind of dabbled in others before, but they are always for the other people owned them. So I'd go over to their house and I'd kind of goof around on you know, The Witcher 3 or something like that. But this is, Zelda was really my first open world game. And this is different. I want to climb everything, but can't. It's definitely way more narrative driven. I prefer Zelda's sort of open, empty world, really, if that makes any sense. That might not make a lot of sense to a lot of gamers out there, but I actually liked the sort of loneliness that Zelda's world had. There's a lot going on in Skyrim, and everybody's gabbing away, man. You can just sit there and listen to a conversation for a half an hour and not do anything. I feel half of my time in Skyrim accomplishes nothing. I enjoy it. Like, I enjoy that I can just walk away, and I do walk away from, like, 9 out of 10 conversations, and I just try to cycle through my own things. I really love the way that it... I didn't realize how sophisticated it was in its the behavior of its characters, of the NPCs, like how your choices really affect the way that they react to you and look at you. And I've only, you know, I'm not very far into this thing, but I'm already impressed by that. Even for an 8-year-old game, this could have easily just come out yesterday and I would still be impressed by this game.
I think the real question, though, is when does Elder Scrolls 6 hit, right? Because like you pointed out, this game is now ancient, like the mythology that it's based on.
Yes, but anybody who hasn't played it, I strongly urge you to pick this one up if you're looking for another open world. I can see myself spending a lot of time in this. The quests are very, very well done. I have to say they actually feel substantial as opposed to just fetch quests like in Xenoblade 2 or something.
Yeah, no, that's kind of like Elder Scrolls is just super well fleshed out no matter which one you're talking about. Plus, you can take that thing on the go now. That's so cool.
So Patrick, as a fan of Breath of the Wild, and I'm also a huge fan of The Witcher 3, but I was extremely disappointed in Xenoblade Chronicles 2. Would you recommend I pick it up? Because I didn't buy Skyrim because I thought I'd be playing 200 hours of Xenoblade Chronicles 2. And I kind of feel like I should return to the game, give it a second chance, and maybe play a bit more of it because I paid like a lot of money for it. But I've never played Skyrim.
Okay, so yeah, I, as somebody who felt the feels the exact same way, like love Breath of the Wild, didn't play enough of Witcher 3 to really know whether I would love that, but disappointed by Xenoblade 2 and stopped playing that. I actually sold my Xenoblade 2. I know I'll never go back to that game. Not for me. But yeah, this one I can tell already I'm going to dig it quite a bit more. This is, it's not Breath of the Wild freedom, but the world is pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. And there are so many characters. I can't, they would have had to hire a horde of writers to make all of this dialogue. I'm super impressed by the amount of care and that was given to this world. It feels very alive. And like I say, the quests, you can do whatever you want right off the bat, pretty much. And everything feels like the quests are way more interesting. And I love exploring this world. There are reasons to explore this world versus Xenoblade 2, which I always felt like there wasn't really, because I'd just get murdered if I didn't stick to the path. So, and there wasn't really much out there to find anyway. But this feels like there's good stuff out there. And so
I don't have to sit through like 3 hours of cutscenes.
No
cutscenes in Skyrim. There will be like moments where the action will stop and someone will walk into screen and that kind of thing.
Right.
But there are no real cutscenes to speak
no.
of.
Only the very beginning, like mm-hmm. you're on a trailer, and it's just sort of like the opening credits, right? And you can look around, so it's not really a cutscene, but you can't move yet because they have a little bit of story to get out of the way before they set you free. But they set you free really quickly. And yeah, Tim's right. Like the only things, they'll stop you very occasionally, but they're very brief. It's just a conversation where somebody's going to give you a main quest, essentially something for the main story. And it's a very brief thing. You just go through your dialogue stuff if you want to. And then they'll continue that conversation. If you're interested, you can stick around and listen, or you can bolt and head out the door and start doing stuff.
Because I like cutscenes. Like I like cinematic cutscenes in my game. I especially like the fact that the cutscenes for me is a nice, it's like it gives me a nice time to take a break, and I know exactly where I am. And so when I come back to the game, I'm not lost and like and confused because I'm in the middle of a dungeon, for example. But a game like Uncharted, I always talk about Uncharted because it's like one of my favorite video game franchises of all time. Most of the cutscenes come in between chapters, which I think is great. But you know, I don't like the type of game like Xenoblade Chronicles 2 where you have to sit through 20-30 minutes of cutscenes before you can actually start playing the game again. It's a little too much.
Yeah, it's nothing like that. Nothing like that. And you know me in story in games, and I'm not annoyed by the story in this. It is really like take as much of the story as you want. It's got a ton of lore. I mean, there's books that you can collect and read about it. It's all about
Elder Scrolls is nuts. You have no idea.
If you want to get involved in the story, you are free to do so. Or if you want to go around and explore the world, you are free to do so. And there's some epic events that do happen, like, you know, in the beginning, especially there's a very cool thing that happens right off the bat. And it's not a cutscene, but it is it's an event. So
isn't that one of the coolest event starts to a game?
Oh yes, absolutely.
I love that.
Yeah, very cool. So far, I'm really liking it, and visually, it holds up really well. I think the world of Skyrim is gorgeous. Their water physics are amazing. I know we're still talking about water, and I'm still impressed with water all these years later. Even after Wave Race 64, I'm still impressed when somebody does water really well. And Skyrim does water great.
Does it have dragons?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Right
have
up,
you fought
right
any
off
yet,
the bat,
Patrick?
Rick. What's that?
Have you fought any yet?
I fought one dragon, yes.
Was it
not by myself. It was part of an event that I had to complete for like a quest.
Okay, it gets crazy intimidating when you're like minding your own business and all of a sudden like a dragon swoops at you. It's just like, oh crap.
That happened, Tim, and he destroyed me. I actually like ran into the nearby town and I brought the dragon with me and everybody was furious with me.
Yeah.
And they were trying to kill me, man. I was just trying to get away from the dragon and they were yelling at me for bringing the dragon nearby.
Does it have zombies?
I don't know. There are weird monsters in the caves.
They're draugrs. They're not zombies, but they are undead warriors that will attack you. And yeah, Patrick's not there yet, but there are also there are also werewolves and vampires. So.
No way.
Yeah. There are giants. There are woolly mammoths. There are all sorts of weird things going on in this place. A lot of cool enemies.
What about them little dudes? What do you call them? Not orcs.
Goblins?
No, oh, goblins. the little dudes.
Trolls?
No, trolls are tall.
Like, I don't know.
Like midgets. Like
dwarves.
Gnomes. Oh my god, does it have gnomes?
You don't see any dwarves, but there's like a lot of dwarven architecture and stuff.
Okay, last question. Can you play soccer with cars?
No. Not that I'm aware of.
It is very physics-based, and you can make all sorts of crazy games. You can, like, drop buckets on people's heads. You can just have fun, like, launching bodies. There's all sorts of ridiculous stuff you can do.
Just go near a giant, and you'll get launched.
It's so good. I love this game. I've played through twice, I want to say. And I didn't even change the way I played. It was just so fun getting back in there. So that goes to tell you how good it is.
I'm very glad to have to finally get to play it. I'm enjoying it so far quite a bit.
Yeah. So that's rad. Glad you picked that up. And Rick, let me know when you do. Man, I'm having a hard time not picking this up. I cannot justify owning this game again. But it just seems so fun right now as I anxiously wait for Elder Scrolls 6 to be announced at E3 this year, please. Anyway, you guys have been playing a lot of really cool indie games, and Skyrim has a lot of dungeons in it, but does it have the darkest of dungeons? I don't know. Rick, you've been playing a little game.
I'm not going to talk too much about Darkest Dungeon because I kind of feel most people know of this game. It's been out for a while. It first got released on PC. You can even play it on your iPad. I really like this game. I haven't put much time into the game. It's basically a dungeon crawler RPG that's heavily inspired by H.P. Lovecraft. So if you like Lovecraft,
love him.
Yeah, I think you're going to love this game. It's got great voice acting, an amazing story. It's one of those games that when your character dies, he's dead for the rest of the game. But you have multiple characters to play with. So it's not like the game just completely ends. Like you have a crew of, like, I think 15 characters that you can switch between. And you can choose which characters you want to use at any given point in time. Sort of like Fire Emblem Warriors, right? You take your crew of like four characters, you go out into battle. I just wanted to really quickly talk about this game because there is sort of like been a debate online about the version released on the Nintendo Switch. Some people think it's the best version. Some people think it's the worst version. So it's just like, it does not make sense to me. So here's the thing. I actually think that this is the best version. Now, I've played a bit of the game on PC. I played it on Steam, and I played it on Switch, and I've seen it played on the iPad. The problem with the iPad version is, first of all, you're playing a game on an iPad. Like, I don't know. I know, like, the Switch, you know, you could take it on the go and everything, so same applies to an iPad. But it's just, for me, it's weird playing a game on an iPad. But the thing about the iPad, so the iPad uses a 4:3 aspect ratio. So what do you think happens? You get the bars at the top and the bottom of the screen to get the widescreen look, right? So it takes up a lot of space on the actual screen of the iPad. Whereas with the Switch, you get the 16:9 display. And the game looks fantastic on the Switch. But the reason why I say you should play it on the Switch is because it just works so amazing when you're playing on handheld mode because it has a touchscreen. And there's so many options, dudes. Like, you don't understand. Like, there's so many weapons. Like, each character, like, you can change just about everything about the character, from the name to the outfit they wear to the type of weapons they use, the magic spells they have, et cetera, et cetera. And there's so much to go through when it comes to the menu system that having the touchscreen just makes it so much faster as opposed to being on the PC and or even just playing on your Switch but playing on TV mode. So the thing about Darkest Dungeon is, if you want to play a game on the go, handheld mode, this is a great game to take on the go. This is the kind of game that I will want to play on the bus or on the train. And that is why I think the best version of this game is on the Nintendo Switch. Now, of course, you can still play TV mode. You can still play tabletop mode. And TV mode's fine. The only problem with the TV mode is you better have a big TV. and or sit really close to your TV, because like I said, the menu system is so complex that sometimes it's hard to see the icons and to navigate through the menu system. But if you can get past that, and again, if you play in handheld mode, it's a fantastic game. Like, probably the best game on a Switch for handheld mode.
What is the gameplay like in this game? It's a dungeon crawler, you say? Is it like, what game would you compare it to as far as gameplay goes?
Okay, so it's a side scroller. So you have like your four characters and you walk from the left side of the screen to the right side of the screen, but it's not a platformer. Like, they walk very, very slow. And it's like an RPG game. Like, you know, say you're walking for like 30 seconds, you come across like two enemies and you have to battle the enemies. So it has like a typical RPG battle system. And, you know, you get to decide who you want to use first, who goes second, who goes third, who goes fourth. And then you can swap between the different items they have, the weapons, the magic spells. You have to heal the characters, you know, especially if they get wounded. Like I said, if your character dies, he's gone for the whole game. And so, but it's... See, Patrick, I don't know if you would like the game. I don't think you would dislike it. But it's like a slow-paced game, you know? And it is what it is. So, like... I think it's great, but I like it more for, I hate to say this, I like it more for the story and for the characters and for the lore and just for the visual aesthetic. Like, I love the look of it. Like, it's really heavily inspired by H.P. Lovecraft.
Okay. I mean, it sounds interesting. A side-scrolling RPG is not something you find every day, so.
Would you say it's the Dark Souls of side-scrolling RPGs?
Is it hard?
Oh, yeah, it's hard.
It's brutal.
I haven't played much of it. Like, I played a bit on Steam, and then I've played a bit on my Switch. So between my Switch and Steam, I would say I played maybe 4 hours. And it's really, 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 really hard. Like, the first time I played it, my characters died, like, right away. I had to start the whole game. Like, I had to start over completely. So, yeah. Because the thing is, it's not hard in a sense like Celeste is hard, where Celeste is physically challenging you to be so precise when you're jumping from one platform to the next platform, avoiding traps and spikes and you name it. It's not about quick reflexes or your skill has a player. It's more about strategy. Like, what characters are you going to use? What weapons are you going to use? What are you going to use to fight off against this monster and this monster? Are you going to go back to the village and retreat? Because, like, technically you should go back to the town and rest, but the game sort of like mocks you if you do, because it feels like if you don't finish the dungeon and you go back to the town, it weakens your character. Like, your character actually becomes weaker. He's not as not just motivated, but he loses confidence in himself, and he starts to fear the dungeons. So if I'm like halfway through a dungeon and I retreat to the town, it might save my character who's about to die, because then I can heal my character, but it technically makes the character weaker moving forward. So little things like that, yeah.
That's cool. I like that concept. I don't know how I would like it in actual execution, but I like the concept on paper anyway.
And you might like the gameplay also.
I don't mind RPG, like, you know, turn-based gameplay. I'm assuming it's turn-based. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I don't mind that at all. It could be interesting.
Actually, you know, I think you might like it. I think you might like it. Because, like I said, it's not hard like the way Celeste is hard. Like, it's not going to frustrate you because you don't like the controls or because they purposely made the game hard for speedrunners or whatever. It's just, it's all about strategy. And it's about understanding the characters, the weapons, the magic spells, et cetera, to figure out the best way to finish the game. Because the thing is, your characters are going to die. Like, there's no way to play this game. I don't care how good you are. There's no way to play the game and not have like half of your roster die. So you're going to lose characters.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned Shu a while back, and man, this game is not getting enough love, guys. I like, it's funny because I went on Metacritic and I think I noticed only 7 reviews published. 7? Like, nowadays you get like 2,000 reviews published for every game released because there's like 20 million websites, right? This is actually a really good 2D platformer, guys. And for anyone who's frustrated with the game Celeste because you think it's too hard, I recommend trying Shu, because I think it's very easy. It's maybe a little too easy for my liking, but it's a plain old-fashioned side scroller, and it looks beautiful. I love the characters. There's no cinematic cutscenes. There's no no violence. Like, I mean, Because, like, you don't actually fight characters. There's no combat. You do get chased by, like, I guess you would call it, like, a boss or a creature at times. But the actual character that you play with does not fight anyone. And so the whole point of the game is you have to save these orphans in each level. When was the last time you played a platformer where there's no violence? Like, you don't actually have to fight anyone. It's a perfect, perfect game to introduce to, like, say, your child. Like, if you have especially if you have a daughter. For some reason, I think this game would really appeal to little girls. It's the perfect game. And it's also got a great soundtrack, by the way. But I love the look of it because it mixes in this sort of, like, 2D graphics with 2.5 graphics, if that makes any sense. Like, okay. It reminds me sort of, and maybe this is giving the game too much praise, but it reminds me at times of Rayman.
Oh, all right.
So, yeah, because, okay, so it's hard to explain, but it has the 2D style. Think of the 2D style. It's all hand-drawn, color-sketched, so it looks beautiful. So remember, like, in the Super NES days, how one of the things that made the Super NES, like, better than the other consoles on the market was the way they would render the background visuals? And so that's what I think of when I'm playing Shu. Like, the contrast between the two styles, like, the contrast between the actual characters and the actual level, like, itself, the background. So I just think it looks beautiful. Like, it has 3D backgrounds. It's not 3D. Like, it's not fully 3D, which is why I say 2.5D. But there is a contrast between the actual backgrounds, the world, and the characters, which is really interesting. And what I love about this game is, remember, Patrick, a while back you were talking about World to the West, and you said it was sort of annoying because you would have to, I think, swap between characters, and it became time-consuming and sort of like a nuisance, right?
Yeah, you had to retread everything you did with four different characters, which got to be super annoying. It just felt like filler. You'd basically be, you'd travel through a few screens with a character, then you'd have to swap back to a character who was back where you started, go through all four screens again with that character, then swap back to the third one, then the fourth one, and then repeat that process as you move throughout the world. Yeah, it got to be very, very annoying.
Okay, in this game, you actually get to play with different characters, but the great thing about it is, the main character, Shu, the protagonist, will save characters throughout each level. And when you save a character, the character sort of joins your squad. So the character will follow you until the end of the level. And you can swap between the characters by simply pressing one button. And you can take over that. Like, you can basically control the second or third character. At times you can have more than one or two characters. And you can use that character's powers and abilities to help you get to the end of the level. So it's just really cool how you can play with multiple characters by simply pressing one button. And you need to switch between characters. It doesn't give you a choice because you're going to have to switch to so-and-so character because so-and-so character has an ability that can, I don't know, break walls or barriers. And so you need to switch to that character if you want to break the wall and barrier to progress through the level. So I think that's really cool because I just like I've also complained in the past about how sometimes you play platformers, you have to swap between characters, and it can be sort of like a nuisance. Not in this game.
That's good. I mean, I know I sort of read the review that was on our site, and I cannot remember right now who reviewed it. But, you know, they talked about how easy it was, which is fine. You know, not every game needs to be a punishing platformer. Either there has to be introductory platformers for, you know, younger people or inexperienced people or things like that. Sometimes it's just nice to go through a game, have some pretty visuals, have, you know, a few things to challenge you, but just have it be more relaxed pace. There's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. So, and I have seen sort of the previews for Shu, and it looks good.
I think you would like it. And to be fair, yeah, the game is easy, much like a Kirby game, but there is so much to collect. So if you're one of those gamers that likes to collect everything, then, you know, you can go back and play the game and, I don't know, try to beat your high score or speed run or just collect everything in each level. I think if I'm not mistaken, there's six stages. Each stage has three levels, but the Switch version includes a bonus DLC stage called Cavern of the Nightjars. So if you're going to play the game and you own a Switch, buy it on the Switch.
Okay, I'll check that one out. I'll take another look at it, I think, on the eShop.
Yeah, there are plenty of games on the eShop right now, including the next game we're going to talk about after this short break, bringing us a little bit of Metroid, and maybe even stars a female hero as well. So don't go anywhere.
Yeah.
right now on the eShop, there are a ton of games, but two games that have been receiving a lot of attention, and rightly so, are Dundara, which, Patrick, you've been playing a lot of, as well as Owl Boy, which Ricky has been playing a lot of. So why don't we start with Dundara? Patrick, what is this game? And then we'll kind of review it.
Okay, so Dundara is basically a Metroid-style game, but it adds kind of an interesting twist with the gameplay. You play as Dundara, who is loosely based on a Brazilian hero, like from the 1600s, that fought against...
That did not have these superpowers.
No, did not have these superpowers, but did kill people, from what I understand, and fought against slavery, and then ended up, like, sacrificing her own life in the fight against slavery.
Spoiler.
So, this... yeah, sorry for anybody who was waiting for that Dundara movie to come out. Sounds like a fascinating character. This character is inspired in spirit by that Dundara. There's absolutely no story relation to that whatsoever. This Dundara, the video game, takes place in like this weird future world planet that I can't really explain. It has a lot of parts that don't seem like they would fit together, but somehow do, and to make this strange otherworldly sci-fi setting.
It's like a bizarro version of Planet Zeebs or Planet Zebes.
Yeah, and thrown in with like some old NES style sci-fi stuff where you're wandering through, you know, pubs and city streets and whatever at the same, you know, and then you'll go into a forest and then a desert, and it's all very strange. Yeah, it's all interconnected. Rick, didn't it seem to you like you're on a space station almost, because the background is always surrounded by stars?
Imagine the worst filmmaker in the world. What's his name? Uwe Boll?
That's a good choice.
Okay, so imagine if
we also would have accepted Ed Wood and Tommy Wiseau, but it's fine.
Okay, but specifically Uwe Boll. Imagine if he directed a Black Panther in space.
I mean, I like the setting in this game because somehow it does work, and the vibe was weird. So it does have it doesn't really have a narrative. For anybody looking for that, there's not really much of a narrative there. There are weird characters that you run across, that is true, and it has this sort of mythological sci-fi. There are people do say things to you, but I don't know what any of that stuff meant. And it doesn't really matter.
Do you like to get dizzy, Tim?
Okay, so the gameplay. Yes. The gameplay is the highlight of Dundara for me. And okay, so this is the weird thing that takes a little getting used to. Your character can't run or move sideways in any way.
It's like Bionic Commando, which is actually one of my favorite games on the NES. As soon as I started playing this game, I right away was reminded of Bionic Commando. You can't jump, but really, Dundara moves at one speed.
Well, no, Dundara can't run. Yeah, she cannot run at all. She can't move except via her little like warp mechanic. She's like Nightcrawler, right?
Okay, swing. Swing is a better way to phrase it.
Well, she can't even swing.
Well, what do you call it? She has her freaking extension, like Bionic Commando, and that's how she moves across the screen.
Oh, no. She doesn't have an extension. She has this... Okay, so she warps like Nightcrawler, but how you decide where she'll warp is like when you hold down a button,
warping. She's like... Okay, she's not swinging, but like it's not warping. It's not teleporting. Like
It is. It's like a dash.
You think
like
that... That would be the proper verb to describe her action?
You're right. It's not a teleport. It's a dash. She does like a Celeste-type dash. It's
like Bionic Commando.
She doesn't have like a chain or an arm or anything like that. There is no... It's not like she's attaching herself via some sort of grappling hook.
No, she but is, it's sort of like Spider-Man dashed. Where it comes... The webs come out of his like wrist, right?
Yeah, but that's not really what she does. Nothing comes out of her.
This game is so confusing. I played this game, by the way. I haven't played much of it. And I was just so confused by the game.
So, okay. Before we confuse anybody any further, it's basically like the... all right, so Dundara can dash, right? But she can only dash to certain spots, like certain spots on the floor, ceilings, and walls. So the game plays with gravity a little bit. You can stand on the ceiling. You can, you know, stand underneath a platform. And you can stand on the wall. but only in these like marked areas, and they've placed them all around each kind of screen. Each not level, but each screen that you're in like a Metroid style screen.
Yeah, sorry, I think in your review you actually compared it to Nightcrawler and Spider-Man.
Yeah, I think it gives you that sort of sense. Like, you can fly around a stage like you imagine Spider-Man would. You're not actually swinging, but you're sort of, like, warping from spot to spot so fast that it gives you this sense of, like, yeah, you could compare it to the feeling one might get from slinging webs, but you're not actually shooting anything out. You're just sort of dashing there. You're not warping, it's true. You're dashing because you can still get hit mid-dash.
So she's restricted because it's a metaphor for slavery.
I don't know about that, but no, because basically what's happened is the people, you can tell in the world, the environmental storytelling is there, where something has happened on this planet, and these, like, other alien monsters have enslaved everybody, these, like, robot alien things. So I don't know that they've enslaved everybody either, but they've definitely taken over, and they've caused a lot of destruction. So as you wander around, there are certainly, like, ruins, and there are these godlike creatures that give you cryptic hints and all sorts of weird stuff. There's disembodied heads. There's cat people with spears. I don't really know how to describe anything. The narrative doesn't make any sense, and I don't think it's supposed to. It's just a vibe. But the gameplay is where the fun is because of this dashing mechanic, and it makes every room a puzzle. Getting through it, when you can't move freely, you sort of have to plan your route because there are enemies in the way. And there's one part of the gameplay that I do not really like, and I'm not sure why they did this, but you can fire a gun, but you have to actually charge the gun before you can fire. So you can't really just, like, dash around and get off quick shots. You have to stop, charge your gun, and then shoot. So in a sense, this makes things even more puzzling because you have to buy yourself time with every shot. And sometimes on the bosses, when there are things flying all over the screen, that doesn't make it very easy.
Or but when it's spinning upside down.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so there are lots of ways that Dandara, the game, plays with gravity and allows, you know, like, rooms can sometimes spin as you enter them, Metroid style, by the way. Like, you're going through these doors that might as well have been taken out of Metroid. But the whole room might spin as you enter. So all of a sudden, you're standing on the ceiling, and so what it looks like, the way that it faces on your map, because there is a Metroid style map, although it's not nearly as good as a Metroid map, the way it looks on your map isn't necessarily the way that you're going to face it, because you might enter the room standing on the ceiling, or you might enter that very same room from the wall. And so it'll switch things around sort of depending on how you're maneuvering through the room, which was a cool thing. It's kept you sort of on your toes. But I loved the planning my routes through everything. I loved taking a look at the screen. There are never so many enemies when you enter a room that you feel like you're going to be overwhelmed. You always have a chance to sort of think about how you're going to move through this room. And I think it has some good, like, environmental puzzles. You do get powers, and there are lots of secrets, of course, and there, you know, you can increase your health, you can increase your healing ability, which actually seems like a reserve tank, essentially, although you have to activate it. There are all sorts of Metroid-style things. There's little platforms. You unlock the ability to move little platforms along the way that'll help you go back and explore other areas. So you do have to remember quite a bit in Dandara, because it does not mark things on its map like a Metroid game does. So you aren't going to necessarily see, oh, I couldn't get through that door. There was a weird thing there. You're going to have to remember these things. Luckily, the map isn't so huge that you can't get around fairly quickly. A couple of times I got kind of confused and lost, but I just powered through and kept going to spaces that I knew I hadn't explored yet, and eventually I found the solution to everything. It's a game that requires a little bit of patience, but it also gives you that time for patience. There's also, Rick, I don't know if you've encountered this, is a weird Dark Souls mechanic. You collect salt, which is the name of the planet you're on, by the way, salt. You collect salt, and that's how you level up. Once you collect enough of it, you can level your character up in some way. But if you die, you will lose all of that salt, and you'll drop it at the place that you died. And the only way to get it is to go back and retrieve it. When you die, you'll start at these campsites, just like with Dark Souls. You have a campsite, and that's where you can save all of that kind of salt. And the game will reset you back there if you die. So finding your campsites is important.
So I think this is a good game. I'm not crazy about it because I just have, like, a huge problem with the actual mechanics of the controls. I find it really annoying teleporting, dashing, whatever you want to call it, through the level, and then having to use your gun, your weapon, like you said, having to wait for it to charge. I just think that they could have found an easier way to make it a bit more smooth. It's not terrible. It's a good game. It's just, you know, as you, Patrick, I can talk highly about, and I've played very little of this game, to be fair, but I could talk highly about the mythology, the character, the look, the sound, the graphics, et cetera, et cetera. It's just the controls that drive me up a wall. It took me forever to get used to it, for whatever reason.
Yeah, and that's something to definitely think about. It was very funky at first, and I wasn't sure I was going to like it. And especially when I fought the first boss, I was thinking, I'm never going to be able to do this. I'm never going to be able to beat this game because I can't get the controls down well enough in order to fly around the room and beat this disembodied head that's shooting things at me everywhere. And it's like I couldn't figure out how to dodge. I kept running into stuff. And then it just sort of settled in. I mean, I think I played that boss a second time and died. And then the third time, everything kind of just clicked. I realized that I was rushing before and I didn't need to move quite as quickly. And that might be the key. You don't need to move quite as quickly as you think you do a lot of the time. You can really plan things out. And that's what I did. And all of a sudden, the control scheme clicked with me. And it's not the most precise thing in the world. And I'm not going to overpraise it. I like the idea of it a lot. And I think it's executed well enough that I really, really enjoyed it. I think it could have been executed a little bit better. I think they should have gotten rid of that charge. That should not happen. That's very annoying, and I don't see what purpose it really serves. It does force you to plan things out a little bit more, but more so in an annoying way and not in a clever way. But other than that, I ended up liking the dashing mechanic. It did take a little while to get used to, though. I'm not going to deny that. It's a little weird, but eventually it became not second nature. Well, pretty much second nature. Yeah, I was able to fly through stuff. I mean, there were points where I was just like blazing through rooms, no problem. And later bosses, I you know, no problem at all. It allows you to attack and retreat so quickly, unlike other games where you have to run up, you know, attack, and then your character has to actually physically run backwards. You don't have to do that here. It's just dash in, dash out. It's like Nightcrawler. You feel like Nightcrawler sometimes. Like you could go in, warp in, and punch somebody, and then warp back, and they have no idea what just hit them. And it allows you to do that, and I did that quite a bit, and I enjoyed that.
Yeah, sounds cool. Looks really cool. But, Ricky, you've been playing another indie game, which is not technically a new game, but it is out today on the Switch. And this one is definitely worth checking out as well, and that's Owlboy.
Yeah, so I did not realize this, but I just talked about Shu, and the main character, Shu, in that game is actually a bird, and it looks like an owl. So I played two games that star an owl boy, or like back-to-back, which is really bizarre. Dude, I love this game. Love this game. Holy cow. This is an amazing, amazing, amazing game. Okay? Patrick, you would love this game. So this game, I don't know if you know the story. This game comes from D-Pad Studio. It took them 9 years to make this game. It's a team of 5 people. Two developers, 1 artist, the composer, and I think the 5th person really just focuses on marketing. 5 people, 9 years in the making, finally got released on PC back in, I don't know if it was late 2015 or early 2016.
I think it was 2016.
2016, finally got released on PC. Now it's available on Nintendo Switch. It might be the best indie game on Nintendo Switch. I think I like it way more than Celeste, even though I think Celeste in some ways is a small masterpiece, but we talked about that last week. So this is a retro 2D Metroidvania style indie game. But here's the thing. Usually when you tell someone, hey, do you want to play or I recommend this 2D Metroidvania style indie game, like how many games have we had released in the past like 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years that are 2D Metroidvania style games that took inspiration from like classic Metroid and Castlevania games? There's like a million games, maybe not a million, maybe 1,005, but there's a lot, right?
Not to mention, like, the actual titles themselves and their spiritual successors. Like, we've got Bloodstained coming, we've got Axiom Verge, so it's just so many.
Axiom Verge, perfect example. Perfect comparison point. So Axiom Verge is a game that set out to look, feel, and pretty much be Super Metroid and Metroid. Right?
Yes, definitely.
The thing about Owlboy, and what I love about it, one of the things I love about it, is although it takes inspiration from games like the original Legend of Zelda games, Kid Icarus, Castlevania, it feels, looks, sounds, completely different than any of the games that inspired the creators, based at least on the interviews I've read with the creators of this game. It does not feel like those games, guys. Like, there's a fine line between imitation and inspiration. So unlike Axiom Verge, which is sort of like a carbon copy of Super Metroid and Metroid, Owlboy feels fresh, and that is what I love about the game. And one of the reasons is because of the visuals, the look. They use this animated pixel art, and it's just beautiful. It's got this lush, colorful palette, and it has like a retro aesthetic in some ways, but the developers, the studio, describe it or term it high bit. That's how they term it, high bit. And so the look of the game, it doesn't necessarily look like those games. Even though they're taking inspiration from those games, this game is just gorgeous. Like, I mean, you can press pause at any point in the game. And believe me, I have tons of screenshots that I'm going to be posting in my review that I'm publishing after we record this podcast. And anytime you press pause, you can use it as a screensaver on your computer or whatever. Like, it's gorgeous. When I read an interview with the developers, they said that they originally had the idea way back in 2007. It was around the time that Nintendo announced the Revolution console, which eventually became the Wii. And they had this idea back in 2007 to make a game that was a callback to pixel-driven action games of the late 80s and early 90s. But the thing is, in 2007, that was sort of like a novel idea. But because the game took so long to finish, we've had so many games like that come out since. So it's gone from being a novel idea to sort of something that's popular and now an overcrowded, oversaturated market of like Metroidvania style like games. Some people could even say it's like cliche. This game is not that game. This game is amazing. Also, there's a score by Jonathan Gear. His score is incredible. So you know how most of these games, you get the chiptune music, like the soundtrack of these like present day Metroidvania 2D platformers all sound like soundtracks that were released like 20, 30 years ago? Not this game. This game's soundtrack is so good. Like, so good. There's something about it. It's not an orchestra. Like, it's one guy to compose the soundtrack, but it sounds like an orchestra composed the soundtrack. It's lush, it's romantic, it's varied, it's just amazing. It perfectly complements the animations. Now, here's the thing. Oh, by the way, if you play this game and you like the soundtrack, IM8-Bit released the vinyl for the Owlboy soundtrack, and it's amazing. Like, it's beautiful. So it's a 2 LP set, so you might want to check that out. But here's the thing, guys. Here's why I love this game. Patrick, are you ready for this? Cover your ears.
I'm not listening.
So, dude, like, the characters, the story, the mythology, the lore, everything about this game for what is essentially like a platformer that encourages you to explore. It places a heavy focus on combat and exploration, much like a Metroid game would. The story for this game is amazing. And right away, from the opening scene, I fell in love with the character. Because Owlboy, so here's the thing about Owlboy. This is what's so amazing about this game.
I like his name.
Yeah. So, well, his name's not Owlboy, but...
Oh.
No.
Just like Spider-Man's name isn't Spider-Man.
You just ruined that game for me.
The main character's name is Otis. So, you know how in Legend of Zelda... like Link doesn't talk. It's not that Link can't talk. It's just that in the game, we don't actually hear the character talk, right? It's just, for whatever reason, that's the way they decided to make Link. I love it. I think everyone likes it that way. But in this game, the main character, Owlboy, aka Otis, is actually a mute. So he has a disability. So when the game starts, there's this like great cinematic cutscene, and you get to learn a lot about the character. And basically, this is a character who's weak. And he never succeeds. He always fails at whatever it is that he does. Like, he can't fly properly. He can't do anything properly. So everyone in the town bullies him. They're really harsh on him. His mentor is really hard on him. And so right away from the opening cutscene, you just fall in love with this character. Like, it's hard to explain. You have to play the game to understand. But you just care about this character. And that's the way the game starts. For a game to start where I right away... immediately care so much about a character speaks volumes for how well the animation is, how well they, how just how good of a job they did in putting this game together, because the way the characters like emote, like the animations, the way it shows us what the character is feeling and captures like the emotions and the expressive body language on these characters, that's how good the animation is, the visuals, the graphics. So anyhow, you're playing with this character named Otis, Owlboy, and throughout the game, you get to meet like several characters, obviously, but there's actually, like, much like Shu, there's a bunch of characters that you also play with. And much like Shu, with the press of a button, you can swap between each character. And so you need these characters in order to, you know, complete your missions, in order to, like, sort of, like, accomplish your goals, because some characters have abilities and powers that you need when you're playing the game. The supporting cast is so great. You want to talk about a game with so much charm? Oh, my God. Not only is Otis one of the most beloved, charming, like, charismatic characters in any video game I've ever played, but his like, crew is just so cool. So his best friend is named Getty, and his, like, it's his best bud. And Getty, like, they each have their own, like, specific, like, weapons, whatever. So Getty has, like, this fast gun. So when you use Getty, so here's the thing. So Owlboy Otis, he can carry his friends around the map, because Owlboy can fly. They can't fly. So he can carry, for example, let's say you're flying with Owlboy and you have Getty. So he's carrying Getty, and as you're playing with Getty, you can start firing the gun. And if you play with the other characters, you swap between the characters. And they have this teleporting ability, Patrick. but here it's actually a teleporting ability. So let's say you're tired of playing with Getty, and or you don't need Getty. You just want to use Owlboy, aka Otis, in order to get by whatever obstacle that's facing you. You can just let go of Getty, get past the obstacle, and then use the teleport device to teleport Getty and or whoever you're playing with into the next room. And you actually have to do this because there's a lot of puzzles to solve. So there could be like a switch, for example, right? And you have to drop one of your buddies, let's say, for example, Getty, on the switch, which opens the door. But if you remove Getty, the door closes. So clearly you keep Getty on the switch, you go to the next room, and then you teleport Getty to the next room. Because at that point, it doesn't matter if the door closes or not, because you're in the next room with your buddy.
So, wait, I'm confused. You keep Getty on the switch? I thought they were all on the switch.
No. So, like, you're
that was a team pun.
All right, moving on.
Yeah, so there's a bunch of characters. There's this guy named Alphonse. There's this guy named Twig. And you really need these characters when it comes to solving the puzzles. Now, again, going back to the actual character, I just think that there's something cool, unique, I just love the fact that he has a disability, and this is a coming of age story. And like the character Otis, he goes through this tremendous character arc throughout the whole entire game. There is the story to follow, and his character grows. And there's one point where the whole entire town and village gets attacked by these pirates. So think like, you know, like in Super Mario, Bowser shows up and he's got those giant pirate ships, and he just like attacks the Mushroom Kingdom. Very similar to that, only they destroy the whole entire kingdom and kill almost everybody. And halfway through the game, there's this incredibly sad yet touching moment in which Owlboy, because he gets injured, everyone gets hurt, like the whole entire town gets blown up to shreds. So there's like, it cuts to black. Owlboy Otis wakes up, he recovers from his injuries, and he has to go and explore the town again and talk to everybody. And you get, at one point, you find Getty, his best friend, who's usually very chipper. He's very like, he's just a happy guy, right? And he's all depressed. You find him at the cemetery. And they say in the game, it's the very first time they've ever had a cemetery in the game, because they never had anybody die. And it's so heartbreaking. Like, it's so heartbreaking for a 2D platformer. And there is this mythology to it. There's these great characters. There's this backstory. I won't spoil it for you guys, but halfway through the game, you find out why the pirate robots are doing what they are doing, and you find out who is responsible, and there's like sort of like a twist. And then at the end of the game, guys, and I really want to come back and review this game from start to finish and go into spoilers, because it has one of those endings that can be interpreted in many different ways. And it's not like a twist ending, you know, it's not like The Usual Suspects or Seven or whatever, it's The Sixth Sense. It just has this ending in which you can walk away and think one thing, and then Patrick can walk away and think something else, and I can walk away and think whatever, whatever.
Kind of like Pan's Labyrinth or something.
Yeah, So all in all, it's just fantastic. And, you know, there's a lot of boss fights throughout the game. And this is the other thing about the game. So I know how usually when you play these games, most games, there's like each level sort of like has the start and the end. And then you maybe have like a cutscene or fades to black. And I don't know, you either end up in the hub and or the overmap world and or you just progress to the next level. Right. This game, it continues. Like it's like as if it never stops. So like you go through one level, one stage, and right away it just sort of blends into the next scene. It's like watching a movie. The last thing I'm gonna say, it's not a very long game. I finished it in a weekend. So you can finish this game in less than 10 hours.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think all of us are into that.
I'm telling you guys, it's so good. You should really pick it up. It's gonna be released in May. They're going to release a physical version in May. I'm actually going to buy the physical version because they sent me a review code. And to be honest, I wanted to give the review code to someone else, like one of our writers. So just so I can buy the physical release, but I'm kind of really glad I actually picked up the review code because I'm writing this big, like 3,000 word article about the game. And I have no problem buying this game when it comes out because I want to play it again.
See, that's the thing. I'm going to wait, I think, till the physical version comes out because I like the physical versions like you more than the digital versions. So this is at the top of my list, though. I'm going to get this game. I know that. It's right up my alley. I mean, and everything you said basically has reinforced what I thought about it when I saw the preview. So there's no question.
Is it right up your alley or right up your alley?
My
okay. Sorry.
I will say this is kind of funny. Like, one of the things I appreciated about Dundaro was that there wasn't really a lot of narrative, and it sort of connected to the character, you know, myself. But that's a sci-fi game, though, and I always think that sci-fi works best when you can sort of envision yourself in that scenario and you're not imagining it for somebody else. I like the concept of Owlboy, and I'm sure I look forward to the quirky characters. Like, I think that's probably better suited to a game like that has this more fantasy setting.
Yeah, I it's like, think like Kid Icarus in terms of like the way it looks mixed with, you know, the Metroid Castlevania sort of like style.
Yeah.
But the thing about the characters, you can fly, but, you know, there's no like limit. Like, you can fly throughout the whole entire game. Like, some games you can fly, but you can only last like maybe 30 seconds until you run out of stamina.
Yeah.
This game, like, he could just fly. He's an owl. He's a bird. He can fly. And there's something about the controls. It's one of the, like, in terms of like the controls, it's so, like, the way they mapped out the whole control system, it's amazing. Like, I love how you can just so easily swap between characters. Like, there are times where you will swap between all three characters within a span of like 30 seconds to do whatever it is you got to do. And it's so effortless because you only have to press one button.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, like, just like thematically, like, you know, when we always talk about story on this podcast, we always have this argument or debate about it. I don't mean like it's a great story, like it's like, I don't know, like The Great Gatsby or like some book that's like 2,000 pages.
Great Gatsby game coming later this year.
Oh, my gosh. You went to Gatsby first?
Man, but like, but like, I mean, it's not like it does have a beginning, middle, and an end, but it's, I mean, yeah, I know, you know, it does, it's whatever. It's a good story for it's like, it actually, you know what? No, it does have a lot of dialogue. In fact, Patrick, I got to warn you, there are a lot of cutscenes in between the action, in between the stages. There's cutscenes throughout this whole entire game.
You know, here's the thing. I'm fine with stuff like that. I don't mind clever dialogue. I don't want to give the impression that I absolutely despise all dialogue in games, because clever dialogue is fine. I've just never, like, the stories generally don't affect me emotionally in video games. That's what I'm basically talking about. But I don't mind there being a lot of, like, whatever, character building. If they want to do that, that's okay. And it can't be too much in a side-scrolling game, right? It's not like Xenoblade 2, the side-scrolling game, is it?
There is a lot of dialogue in this game. Oh, like, okay. For a game that lasts roughly 10 hours, like, I finished the game in less than 10 hours, there is, I would say, maybe an hour of dialogue and cutscenes.
That's a lot. Well,
yeah.
I mean, can you skip them if you want to?
You can. I just would not recommend you do.
Yeah,
because
I never do it first. It always is like halfway through the game, I generally know whether I'm going to want to see this thing play out.
But it's no different than when we're playing Super Mario, Super Mario Odyssey, and you get to the end of the level, or you start the level, or midway through the level, you get some sort of like cinematic cutscene.
Yeah,
it's not overbearing.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure I'll be fine with it. I don't have a problem with stuff like that necessarily. We'll see. It'll be a game time decision. Yep. But I'm definitely gonna get it. I love Metroidvanias. I like the look of this thing. I've seen the previews. I mean, I'm all over this game. There's no question. I just want the physical copy.
Yeah, which we have to wait for, which kind of sucks. But it is out right now for anyone that doesn't want to wait. And Ricky, sounds like you would highly recommend this game.
Oh yeah, man, I love this game. Like, this, like, I would say that this is my favorite indie game on the Switch right now. Like, and I've played Night in the Woods and Darkest Dungeon and Celeste, and I mean, released this year, like, I wouldn't put it above Shovel Knight, but I will say Shovel Knight might be, in my opinion, a better game, but Owlboy looks better, and unlike Shovel Knight, Owlboy feels like its own beast. You know, like, you could see the inspiration, you could see what inspired them, but it feels like its own thing. Like, Owlboy is the kind of game that's going to inspire future games.
Yeah, yeah. I think the best thing you can say about it is the Shovel Knight wouldn't exist without the games on the NES and SNES, whereas Owlboy kind of looks like the kind of game that might have come out at the same time, but just was its own concept. So, a little bit better looking than an SNES game, though. They have that high bit that they call it, and it looks so sharp. So I can't wait to get this. It just came out, so I didn't get a chance to buy it yet, but I'll probably be playing it this week. And yeah, we'll have to come back to this eventually and do a full-on spoiler review.
We really should. Maybe, I mean, I know it's far away, May, because Patrick wants to play it in May, and I'm going to pick up the physical version. But yeah, no, I recommend it to everyone, including you two. I think you guys are going to love it. And Tim, like, you know, it's a short game, 10 hours. You can finish it in a weekend. I know you're busy playing Monster Hunter.
Yeah. And Overwatch is always summoning me. But you guys, to end the show, we have the best conversation coming up. What would we do if we were directing the Super Mario Bros. Movie? So don't go anywhere, because when we come back after this break, things are going to get a little bit wacky. Every once in a while, very, very, very rarely, we make mistakes, you guys. And one of the mistakes that we made last week was we were talking about all of the Nintendo news, and we only focused on video games. But that was not all that there was in terms of Nintendo news.
We did sort of mention the movie.
So, yeah, we didn't really get into it. There is a Super Mario Bros. Movie coming. We now know that it is being worked on by Illumination Studios, makers of such lovable hits as Despicable Me and Minions and The Lorax. And that's a lot.
They made The Secret Life of Pets, which a lot of people liked last year. I don't know. I haven't actually seen one of their movies, but
actually, I like that movie.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good movie. The Lorax is okay.
The Lorax is a pretty good movie. I thought they did a pretty good job with like the message in that movie. Despicable Me, I don't feel too great on, and the Minions annoy me. So there's a little bit of anxiety, but I can understand why this studio would be chosen for the Super Mario Bros. Movie because of aesthetic, the bright, vibrant colors, the art style, and they're owned by Universal, who Nintendo has a deal with in terms of the theme park. So that's not surprising. This is
You're forgetting one big reason. They're cheap. They bring things in under budget.
Not only that, but I think Tim's right. Like, people forget that Nintendo can't just go to Disney or even Studio Ghibli or Pixar because they're all owned by Disney.
Yeah, anyone that said they wanted Pixar to do it, like, dream on. Pixar is doing their own thing anyway. That's why Disney didn't even try to buy the rights to Nintendo stuff. They're doing their own thing. They're too busy. And their parks are already growing at such an exponential rate that, yeah, it was just never going to happen. So we've got what we've got. But the real question is, how would you direct this movie if you were given the opportunity? Or how would you pen this movie? What would be the central concept? So, Rick, this was your idea, but Patrick and I love it. I am going to defer to you first because I'm going to be honest with you. I am way too tempted to just see how long it takes you to realize that I'm just going scene for scene the original Super Mario Bros. Movie. So,
okay, well, I mean, I think what would make this conversation fun is if we maybe list off a setting, a director, a writer, I don't know, something like let's build the movie. Let's pretend we're a bunch of studio execs sitting at a table, at a round table, and someone's pitching us this movie, and we're going to make this movie with, I don't know, let's start with the director.
I know exactly who I want for this movie. All right, I want Gore Verbinski because of Rango. Anybody
that's
who's seen Rango?
That's actually an insanely good choice, though.
He made such a different style, like a high-quality animated movie. And I think if he could bring that kind of oddness to, and Nintendo does appreciate weird. So if he could bring that kind of odd sense of humor and those rich visuals, he composed Rango like it was shot on a regular camera, which is something that most, even Pixar doesn't do as well as seasoned filmmakers do. He made that movie look like a movie. It was composed beautifully, more cinematically than any other, very few other animated movies. And so that would be my number one choice right now.
And if you're not familiar with Gore Verbinski, he directed Pirates of the Caribbean, the first one, The Ring. The first three, but let's just forget the second and third. the Ring. Mm-hmm. And
a couple of the Weatherman was it, I thought was it was
what
it
was that movie about crazy people recently?
Oh my God, we reviewed
the Cure for Wellness.
Cure for Wellness. Yeah.
I didn't appreciate it. I think Rick, you liked it better than I did, but
he's got a visual knack. If not like story driven, but hey, this is Mario. It works.
Hey,
he also directed The Lone Ranger, which is sort of like cartoonish for a live action film.
So he's got a Johnny Depp thing going on.
Right. And he directed Mouse Hunt. The point is he's actually, honest to God, a great pick. But here's the thing, Patrick, I wouldn't make it a Western. I would make it horror themed, and I would forget Super Mario. You know where I'm going with this, Tim.
Luigi's
right?
Mansion.
Luigi's Mansion. Yeah. Just make the movie Luigi's Mansion. I wrote an article about Luigi's Mansion last year, and I listed like 2,000 reasons why that would make the best movie. So don't be surprised if we get a Luigi's Mansion, even if it's titled Mario's Mansion or something, but some sort of Luigi's Mansion, haunted house, Halloween themed Super Mario movie. It could
not
be possible.
I think it's a sequel, but this is Mario's first foray on the silver screen.
I think that Rick is right.
No
that
one's
going to
correct
movie,
me.
Though.
I'm already wrong, but I think that they're going to start with basics. It's got to be about Mario, right? Everyone wants to see the plumber with the red hat. And if he wasn't the hero, then I think you've got problems. And I think that if you went to Luigi's Mansion, so many viewers would be like, what's going on? There's no Goombas. There's no Bowser. And that's what Luigi's Mansion is, right? You take out a lot of the key elements.
Wait a second. I think we can have a Luigi's Mansion scene in the movie because it's going to be a good tie-in with Universal Marketing. Nobody cares about Psycho, Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho anymore, but they still have the house on the back lot. Turn that into Luigi's Mansion, and all of a sudden those backlot tours are a lot more popular.
Good point, Patrick. What if it's Mario, Peach, Luigi, and Toad go to Hollywood?
Like Crocodile Dundee did.
Like the Muppets.
And the Muppets, exactly. Now wait a second. Does this movie exist in the real world? So they're in the, like, okay, is it going to be like New Donk City where they're
walking around with, say, like, it's straight up just New Donk.
It's like New Donk City or Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, yes. Roger Rabbit. Ooh, live action blend with Mario.
Who directed Roger Rabbit?
That was Robert Zemeckis.
What's that guy doing these days? Let's get him on the phone.
He's doing a lot of animated movies.
Or the future.
Yeah. Zemeckis. We can get Zemeckis. He'd be interested in this.
So are we going to call Gore Verbinski or Robert Zemeckis?
Well, Zemeckis' animated movies have been on a tad on the boring side, unfortunately. But he does make great live action movies, and he does have experience with technology. So if you're going to make it the hybrid, then I'd say Zemeckis. If you're going to make it all animated, go with Verbinski.
But here's the thing about Zemeckis. He directed that very strange Beowulf movie.
Yes.
That animation was weird. Sure. But here's the thing. So he's directed a lot of classics. What Lies Beneath, fantastic thriller/horror film, very inspired by Hitchcock.
Yep. Castaway, of course, Back to the Future.
But the thing is, he hasn't directed anything big, like anything that's made a lot of money in a long time. So I'm assuming he's going to want a smaller paycheck or expect a smaller paycheck than Gore Verbinski.
That's very possible, although Verbinski hasn't had a huge hit in a while either. So both of them could be kind of. But I think Zemeckis would be more interested, especially if you're going to do a live action blend. Granted, he did that already with Roger Rabbit.
Let's be honest, you guys. A live-action blend is the worst idea.
I don't know. Is it? Have you seen New Donk City?
Yeah. Okay, but think about Roger Rabbit, how there was the Toon Town. There could be sort of a Mario characters live amongst people in this specific part of town in Tokyo, Japan, or wherever, Kyoto, Japan, or Nintendo.
Let's keep going then. Like, what's happening? Peach got stolen into the real world, so Mario has to go through video games to get to our world, comes out someone's television, like the girl from The Ring, and tries to find Peach here.
It could also be like, and I'm sure they made a movie about this. I know me and my friend made a movie about this when we were kids. We made a short film where we got sucked into the VCR. So we ended up being in the TV. So like, it's one of the characters got sucked into the VCR, ended up in the TV. And so the short film was, the other two characters were trying to communicate with the character stuck in the VCR/TV in order to try to get him out.
Okay,
and so now, I could swear they've made a movie like that.
So they did, and now it brings up a different question. Do we do something like that? That would be Gary Ross's Pleasantville, where you
right,
go, and
yes,
two live-action people could get sucked into Nintendo's Mushroom Kingdom.
Or Tron. You could go
or
with
Tron, but the reason why I mentioned this is because we talked about this briefly last week, is we don't want Mario to talk. And you got to still have some sort of like dialogue. So you could still have characters like I mentioned, Phantom from Mario plus Rabbids, the operatic like singing boss, right? You could have characters like throughout the movie
I think you do it Paper Mario style. You just have him meet friends that are like, it's a Goomba, but he's got a hat on, so he's a good guy. And he talks instead of Mario. You've got a Koopa. He's got a bandana. He's not a regular Koopa. He also talks. But Mario's still doing his thing, right?
Because I think it would make more sense if they actually had a human character. And that's why I'm thinking like the human character either ends up getting sucked into the Mushroom Kingdom.
They'd have to go to Mushroom Kingdom. If it was Mario in the real world, it would just be weird all over again. Like,
what is Fred Savage doing? Can someone get him on the phone?
Fred Savage is actually like, I think he's doing a game show right now.
He's producing a bunch of stuff. He's actually a really good producer. Fred Savage. Oh my God, they have to do it. Fred Savage in the movie.
And that kid with the power glove from The Wizard.
See, what would it be? Fred Savage's kid would be the one that actually goes in, or like teenager
as,
or something.
No, Fred Savage as a grandpa reading a book to his grandson.
All right, so we're going to blend Pleasantville with the Princess Bride. Can we work in Blade Runner somehow, like the original Super Mario?
Okay, no, but real quick. Okay, so kid is playing super violent video games in present day. Fred Savage shows up and like, no. This is what I played when I was a kid. Brings out the original Mario. Kid thinks it's boring. Then kid gets sucked into Super Mario Bros.
I find it hard to imagine a movie that takes place mostly in the Mushroom Kingdom and just having people react positive to that movie, because there's a huge difference between playing a video game and watching a movie that takes place in that sort of setting.
But just think about the cutscenes in Super Mario Odyssey and how engaging they are and how fun they are.
Well, hold on a second here, guys. You can have the best of both worlds. This has been done with you know, to various degrees of success, but I think the best one is probably, I brought this up name up earlier, is Crocodile Dundee, where you have two fish of water out of water stories in that movie. The first half is the person from the big city is a fish out of water in the outback, and the second half of that movie is the guy from the outback is the fish out of water in the big city. Last Action Hero did the same thing as well, where the kid goes into the movie, but then the movie comes out into the real world. I think you can do both.
What I just said 20 minutes ago. Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
I think, Tim, they need to do that. Well, they don't need to do that. I think it's their best option. If you're not going to make it fully animated and you're going to try to throw in some sort of like live action or humans, you got to have the best of both worlds. And I think it could actually work. I mean, all of those movies. I mean, look, The Last Action Hero isn't a great movie, but it's a fun movie. And at the time, it was a huge hit. Who Framed Roger Rabbit is an amazing movie. And it was a huge hit. Tron was a huge hit. The sequel, not so much. Although Jeff Bridges is amazing in that movie.
And it just like looked dope. I'll give it that. I think I maybe own it because I was like, this looks so dope.
Yeah, but I think also like if they by also doing this, right? Like I don't think you have to stay within a specific setting like this bright Mushroom Kingdom. Like I think
How many worlds Mario travels to, and I think people want to see all those worlds, right? Like I think they want to see him in the course of whatever journey he takes, whether it's like helping a kid get out of the Mushroom Kingdom and he's traveling through all the worlds to get him out. I think that people want to see a Boo House. I think people want to see a Water World, or maybe they won't because we don't like those. They want to see the desert, right?
You know, it would actually be really smart if the movie was centered around the Odyssey and somehow they just added in a human character, because we do have New Donk City in the game. So it's a great way to have that sort of like storyline where you combine the real world with the world of Super Mario, live action and animated, and you tie it into the game, the most recent game, which also therefore ties into the Switch. Bam, you've just sold 50 million units of the Switch.
Absolutely. And I really do think that, yes, people do want to see, you know, what's going on in the Mushroom Kingdom, but you've got to, at some point, this has got to be a story, and you've got to be able to turn that around and twist that. And having those characters, those Mushroom Kingdom characters, now applied to the real world is a great way to do that. It's a great way to put a spin on everything about halfway through the movie so things don't just sort of feel played out already.
Yeah, yeah. Or I don't know. I picture it, the Lego movie was also really well done, and it had, like, tie-ins to the real world, but it was never, like, solely focused there. Mm-hmm. So I think something like that could work too, where maybe, like, there are moments where maybe it is all happening in a video game, but Mario and his friends become aware that someone's playing them and making them do stuff or something, and there's real-world drama outside of the TV or something.
So who composes the music? And if there's going to be, like, a star of this movie, obviously Charles Martinet has to voice Mario for whatever voice, you know, things that he does, but who's going to be the star of this movie?
I mean, that's a question we got to ask. Like, we got to get some, I think a kid in the world of Mario or whatever, there's got to be someone that's not like familiar with Mushroom Kingdom for this to work well. So they're kind of like, wow, look at all this weird stuff. Like, I think the fish out of water element there has to be a thing. But the question is, do you get every voice actor that does Luigi, Mario and on to do that?
Well, Charles Martinet is the one that does most of the voice acting for all the characters.
Does he do Luigi? Does he do Bowser?
Yeah. Yeah,
oh, wow. Luigi, so maybe he does just a one-man show?
Well, no, he does Luigi and Mario. I don't think he does Bowser. But you could easily just look at the cast of, say, It, right? Like, there was that kid that I raved about on the Sword of Cinema podcast. I forget his name now. He played the hypochondriac in It. Like, I thought he was, like...
He was great.
He was great. Like, you get a kid like that, and the kid looks young enough. I mean, I don't know how old he looks now, but just whatever. One of those stars. Like, I would say maybe even, like, Stranger Things, but what's the kid there? The kid that plays... Oh my God! What is his name? He's like my favorite character with the curly hair.
Oh, Dustin.
Oh yes, Dustin.
Dustin. Yeah. You get a character like that in the movie, people love to see him in a Super Mario movie.
Ryan Reynolds.
Oh yeah.
Ryan Reynolds plays Bowser.
You got to have some sarcasm in there for the adults.
Oh yeah, like, I think Bowser could have like a more traditional voice and be comic relief.
Or there's a new character invented, you know, that basically Nintendo's like comes up and, with a mushroom character that gets voiced by.
Yeah. Or maybe there's even a different villain and Bowser has to help Mario take out this other baddie who's threatening Mushroom Kingdom or something like that.
It could also be sort of like the reverse of Peter Pan where, you know, you have, well, actually not really the reverse, but you know how you have Tinkerbell and you have Peter Pan? So in Mario Galaxy, you have Mario and you have Luma.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So they can actually bring in the characters from the Galaxy series, including Rosalina. I would prefer to have Rosalina over Peach.
Yeah.
Or Pauline. Or Donkey Kong.
They could have this awkward moment where Mario runs into all of them at the same time.
Yeah.
And they all sort of meet each other and they're like, oh, who are you? Oh, and Mario's like, oh, no. I mean, yeah, I've been seeing her, but wait a second. No, I'm really... into Peach.
Peach gets jealous. That could be hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think it would be funny when in the movie, Mario's in like the half of the movie that takes place in the real world, Mario walks into like an arcade or whatever and sees like an arcade cabinet of the original Mario Brothers game and starts to play it and is in total awe because he's never played a video game in his life?
Yeah. Either he's he could be really happy or it could be like this bittersweet moment where he realizes that his entire life has been relegated to just a video game where kids just get entertained for about a half an hour and then walk away. That's the summary of his life. I mean, you could really go dark with this thing.
So for anyone that's worried about the movie, there is a million things you can do with this movie. And if they play their cards right, get a good enough screenplay writer, they can actually like have a hit on their hands. They can have like an actual really good movie with a good story and good animation.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look at Wreck-It Ralph was actually a pretty good movie about video games.
Movie.
Not tied down to like a little bit of a lacking narrative video series, but I think something like that could work well where you have a sort of aware video game character. It could be really fun. And Rick, before we move on, you did ask who should do the music. And if not someone from Nintendo, then I think someone who's just amazing at adapting themes and comes up with brilliant work of his own, Michael Giacchino.
Mm, okay.
Or Giacchino. I don't know how to say his name at all. You know who I'm talking about, though, right?
Yes. I would say, like...
Those that don't, he did, like, The Incredibles, the new Star Trek movies, Ratatouille. He did Up. He's brilliant, though. His work's phenomenal.
He's one of the best composers working right now. His name is pronounced Giacchino. I was actually going to say the name of the composer who did the soundtrack for Mario Plus Rabbids.
Grant Kirkhope. That's what I was thinking, too. Yeah, he would have been. He'd be a very good choice.
Yeah, and there you also have a relatively, like, workable sort of narrative. I like kind of like we're talking about, like, some human element brought to the Mushroom Kingdom, right? In this other case of Mario plus Rabbids, it's dumb Rabbids get brought to the Mushroom Kingdom, but same thing. Human kid, weird monster things. They're all the same. Anyway, any final thoughts on the N-Express Super Mario Bros. Movie?
Rick and I were both about to talk at the same
time. Yeah, I just don't want it to be too cutesy. I don't want it to be like one of those movies that's jam-packed with references to pop culture or even video games. Like, I just want a really good story and a fun movie. Like,
I think it has to be super funny, too.
Yeah, but like when I say like okay, like I hate Family Guy. I think it's a terrible show. Every single episode is just referencing something in pulp culture. I don't think it's smart writing at all. It's like they just reference something over and over. Like they reference everything and everything they can. They throw everything at the wall because they know everyone's gonna catch on to at least two of the 20
Right,
references,
like
right?
main character bumps knee, lays on ground in pain, cut to pop culture reference, Michael Jackson moonwalks past.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that show is
You
terrible.
just
So I
alienated
don't.
half our audience, I'm sure, but I 100% agree with you.
No one here, I apologize to those that do. No one here likes that show.
I don't know anyone who likes Family Guy and Big Bang Theory. There's a show, I know it has like 1 million plus viewers per week or more, 14 million, I don't know what it is. Compare that to Community. Community actually had good writing. Big Bang Theory, they just reference pop culture and they have a stupid laugh track that is telling people when to laugh. I
Yeah,
hate that show.
let's keep going, you guys. You guys like The Hunger Games? It sucks. Hate that.
I like The Hunger Games.
No, hate it. Let's
I like
find some
it.
other stuff that people really like and tear it down. Oh yeah, Xbox and Sony. They both suck.
Are we just trying to lose all of our listeners right
Just
now?
starting wars. We're all kidding. All joking aside. Patrick, did you have any final thoughts on our Mario movie?
No, I look forward to seeing what they come up with, though. You know what I look forward to is seeing who the writers are. As soon as those credits come out, I'll be taking a close look at what they've done. And that will give me a good idea as to what kind of movie this is going to be and how seriously Nintendo and Illusion, is that what their name is?
Illumination. That's right.
Illumination, yeah. The Illumination. How seriously they're taking this, or whether they're just trying to churn something out.
Yeah. If the writing is quality, then aspirations. If the writing is terrible, then you should have given it to us, guys. That's how it
Yep.
always goes, right? I'm looking at you, Nintendo and Pokemon Company. You got to give the Pokemon games to me to write the movie for. Yeah, I don't have anything to add. I think it should be funny. It's got to have heart too. It's got to hit home because it's a franchise that we all love. Even if it's just looking back and remembering years worth of video game fun, hopefully it's got the right amount of heart and not just sappy dumb stuff.
Does
So
that did that remind you at all, Rick, about the opening to The Player? It's going to be a sci-fi. It's going to have action, a little bit of horror, but it's got to have heart.
yeah, but
Anybody who
secretly it had been the power of love the whole time is
there's also the scene in Barton Fink, right, which is very similar to The Player. It's not at the opening of Barton Fink, but towards the middle of the movie.
Yep, definitely. Movie pitches are hilarious,
Or
guys.
also the movie Ed Wood has a similar scene. And you know what, Patrick? In the Sword of Cinema podcast, I believe I used a sound clip from each of those three scenes from those three movies in our intro for a Sword of Cinema podcast.
Oh God, now I'm going to be thinking about that. Which ones? I'm going to be remembering the intro, but I
Well, we
digress.
had two intros, one of the two. Anyhow, we got to wrap it up.
Yeah, it's going long. It's going long. So, Rick, thanks for joining us. Where can we find you online?
You can find me on Twitter, Goomba Stomp Mag. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Tumblr, Pinterest, Instagram. We're all over the internet. And guys, oh my God, how did I forget? We now have a newsletter. Now, here's the thing. In December, we announced a contest and we said we would be doing it on a monthly basis. We gave away a copy of Super Mario Odyssey. It was fantastic. We had a bit of problems with the contest. A lot of people were complaining that they didn't want to use Facebook. Some people use Twitter. It was this big, huge mess. So the idea is that we're going to try to use the newsletters for the contest moving forward. So therefore, everyone can participate, including the Game Boys podcast, our readers over at the website, our Twitter followers, our Facebook followers. The point is, I'll have more information in the near future. We have a newsletter. It's on the website, GoombaStomp.com. Sign up. You just have to enter your name and your email address, and that's it.
Yeah, do it. It's dope. Patrick, what about you? Where are you online?
I of course am writing for Goomba Stomp, and you should message me about the Mario movie at Sorted Cinema Duck, at Sorted Cinema on Twitter.
Yeah, or you can at NExpressNintendo on Twitter as well. I would love to chat with you guys about what you want to see from the Mario movie or any Nintendo television or film adaptation. I'm all about it. Come talk with me. I'd love to hear what you think. I'm also at the Freemason, MAISON. And I have another show called Game Boys, all about co-op and multiplayer, which just turned 2. You guys, my podcast is old. So Go listen to the birthday episode, which was fun, and we listed the best games that we've talked about on our show. So that does it for this episode of N-Express. Leave us a review and a rating, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you listen. That would do a lot for us, and we'd really appreciate it. Do all you can to make sure that Illumination and Nintendo see this, you guys. All joking aside, though, love chatting with you guys. Talk to you more next week with all things Nintendo.